From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The death toll from Northern California's Camp Fire has jumped to 48. As search and rescue crews find more bodies. The fire itself has also continued to grow and has so far consumed 8,800 structures. The size of the record-breaking blaze is about 130,000 acres. That's larger than the city of Atlanta. In Southern California, the Woolsey and Heel fires continue to burn as well, but are 40 and 90% contained, respectively. Meanwhile, just a few minutes before the Camp Fire and the Woolsey fires began, utilities companies in both areas reported problems with electricity lines. They're now a focus of investigation. The damage to the environment, to wildlife, to homes, and to the lives of ordinary people is hard to quantify. And worse, this could become the new normal, or as some have put it, the new abnormal in California, as fire season becomes a year-round phenomenon. My guest is Melissa Figueroa. She's a PhD candidate in geography at UC Berkeley. She was the press director for the Stein-Baraka 2016 presidential campaign and executive producer of the Green News Network. She's been a longtime political educator and organizer involved in a wide range of movements for social and environmental justice in California. She's also involved in some major aid efforts in Northern California around the fires. She's a news correspondent for our program. Welcome to the program, Melissa.
Thank you, Sonali, for having me.
So tell us what exactly you are involved in here in Southern California, where I am based. We're just seeing the images, particularly from the town of Paradise, a low-income retirement community that is basically utterly destroyed. What are you seeing up there?
It's quite a dramatic and chaotic scene up there. I am in Berkeley now, thankfully, but even now, there's a lot of smoke in the air. We are having to use these N95 respirator masks to go outside because the particulate matter in the air is so intense. It's very unhealthy and hazardous, especially for children and people with chronic diseases. I'd like to put this in perspective in terms of the displacement of the, especially from the campfire. There are about 40,000 homeless people that have been counted. Of course, there's obviously a lot more, but people estimate about 40,000 homeless people in Los Angeles. That's a city of 9 million people. And we all are very familiar with, you know, the challenges of caring for the unhoused in Los Angeles. Paradise was a city of 27,000. It was not the only community that burned to the ground. Other communities such as Concow, Megalia, Centerville, Helltown, and a lot of foothill communities were also consumed by the fire. Right now, the evacuee total is up to 52,000, up to 40,000 of which may have lost their homes permanently. And they're streaming into places like Chico and Oroville, who have populations of about 75 to 100,000. So if that's just basically putting it in perspective in terms of the challenges that we have with this massive, massive influx of climate refugees. I don't know how else to say it. These are climate refugees. The era of climate refugees is upon us in California as the fires get nearer and nearer to urban areas. Paradise was technically a town, but it was, you know, in all respects, a city. And it's now gone. And we are, you know, having to deal with the overwhelming influx of traumatized people with no possessions who need to start all over again.
I understand that there are still something like 228 people missing. So for those who've lost loved ones or simply don't know if their loved ones are alive, that's an added trauma as well. Are there efforts for aid and help that other unaffected Californians are able to provide? Tell us about the kind of the work that people like yourself have been doing to assist some of these newly homeless folks.
Right now, there are about 1,300, almost 1,400 people in shelters. But again, that's compared against a total number of evacuations of 52,000. Of course, a lot of people are staying with families, but there are a lot of people who are, you know, who don't have anywhere to go, who are unhoused and in and outside at this moment. You add that to the existing sort of crisis level number of homeless and unhoused people in the Chico area, which, you know, many of whom were also refugees from the car fire that just happened a few months ago in Redding. So, you know, the impact is tragic, and it's staggering. I was just listening to the press conference that happened last night with Sheriff Corey Honey, who's done really an admirable job, the best job that any first responder could have done in a situation like this, where people had seconds to get out. One of the things that I think need to be understood about Paradise is that it was mainly, up until recent years, a community of retirees. So there were a lot of senior citizens, people with special medical needs, who didn't have anywhere to go, or who had no means of escape, you know, when the fires were happening. Some of the efforts that Sheriff Honey has described to try to identify human remains is just absolutely heartbreaking. There are about 10 forensic teams up there, and they are now bringing in help from the National Guard and federal authorities to help look for remains. This fire burned so hot that it literally cremated people in their homes. And you know, these recovery teams, they're trying to identify human remains from very, very small pieces of bone fragment. That's how, you know, just absolutely heartbreaking this job is. And, you know, my heart goes out to the people who have lost loved ones or whose loved ones are still missing, as well as the people who really have to do this heartbreaking task of sifting through the wreckage and just trying to sift and look for pieces of bone that could be all that's left of some of the people there.
I mean, when you have a community that is largely seniors, presumably many of them had mobility issues, it would have been hard for them to rush fast out of somewhere. Maybe there were people who couldn't drive or didn't have cars. This is a vulnerable population. There are class issues at work as well, aren't they, Melissa?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, it's a little different from the Woolsey Fire, which, you know, it's impacting Malibu and, you know, other places that are more affluent. So they have insurance, they have, you know, a sort of private, they can afford sort of private services to help them out. This is a low-income community. In recent years, more and more lower-income families have been moving up to places like Paradise and Concow, because land is cheap there. Property is cheap. And you know, as the Bay Area and other larger communities, including Chico, have become far more very unaffordable for regular working class families, these are the people that you are seeing now going further and further out into the wildland urban interface, the danger zone, as it were, for wildfires. So, you know, a lot of the seniors did not have cell phones, and in many cases, people's lives were saved because of their neighbors, basically, you know, going out, running, knocking on doors, making sure people got out. You know, there are many, many stories of, you know, seniors with dementia and other issues being found on the side of the road by random people, by, like, you know, garbage trucks and other folks that, like, picked people up. You know, it was a chaotic scene. Of course, you know, we have our, you know, evacuation plans to be looking at. But, you know, in a situation like this, you know, people do the best that they can, and you know, there's really no foolproof plan for evacuation for a fire that's moving 80 acres a minute.
80 acres a minute. For those who have survived and for those who just live in the surrounding areas, how bad is the air quality right now? And I imagine that that is an added health concern whose long-term impacts and consequences may not be known.
Absolutely. You know, the effects of particulate matter in the air will not you know, can affect you, you know, very in immediate terms. I remember on Friday, I was actually down here in the Bay Area, going around Oakland. It could have, you know, been 7 o'clock at night at 2 p.m. Mm-hmm. I did not have a mask yet at that time, and my nose started bleeding after, you know, just running errands. The long-term effects, we still don't know. You know, some, especially the microparticles that get into the bronchial tubes and the alveoli in your lungs, can have lasting impacts that you may not, you know, see until years and years after. And we're now getting, you know, some advisories that some of the particulate matter in these fires, especially because it is burning up habited areas with like plastics and septic tanks and propanes and you know, different materials that are burning, could also get into your blood. So I very much urge, if people are, you know, in the smoke line, which is pretty much all of California at this point, please get these N95 masks. You know, these these will block out a lot of it, not all of it. So, you know, it is a real health concern to stay inside as much as you can. If people are in buildings that have HEPA filters, that's really the best way to avoid this massive public health hazard that's being caused by the wildfires.
Melissa, some would say, you shouldn't live in areas where fires happen because fires are a normal part of the climate in California. And that has somewhat been true in some parts of the state, right, where fire is a sort of nature's way of cleansing brush. But is that true anymore?
This is available from the San Francisco Chronicle's Fire Tracker. This is the map of fires that have occurred in 2018. And as you can see, literally nowhere in California is safe. Like I said in the beginning, the climate refugee problem is also converging with an economic refugee problem. You know, Mike Davis, when he wrote his seminal work, Let Malibu Burn, in the 90s, I believe, was, you know, dealing with the growth of suburbs and exurbs that pushed into the wildland urban interface due to things like white flight, things like rich people wanting to live away from, you know, poor and working class people in the inner cities, etc. This is a phenomenon that's now been reversing itself in recent years as gentrification has become a major problem in the central cities like the Bay Area. And now you have more and more poor and working class people actually moving out into these suburban and ex-urban areas. It's a phenomenon that's been called the suburbanization of poverty. Again, while it may still be true for places like Malibu and, you know, poor Thousand Oaks, which has gotten, the double whammy of the mass shooting and then the fire, up in Northern California in particular, what we're going to be seeing is that, you know, it's poor people, more lower income people that are moving into these areas as the suburbs and affordable housing is going more and more away from the city. And so, you know, what I've been saying and what a lot of us have been saying up in Chico, even before the fires, was that, you know, this is a climate and economic refugee problem that we have to tackle in combination. Affordable housing is now a climate problem. Affordable housing is now a public health problem. And so, one of the things that we need to do is to be able to create fire resilient landscapes and housing types for people who must live in these areas, but also find housing, transitional housing. We need to have these programs in order to help people that are going to be more and more displaced by these fires and who are more and more unable to recover themselves through insurance or other means as the years go on.
Now, California already has quite a stark wealth inequality. Have you found that during these wildfires that the wealthier communities were, you know, able to find better protection and also survive better because they had the means of escape, second houses to live at, or were, you know, could afford hotels elsewhere?
Well, you certainly see that with places like Malibu. I'm now hearing reports that Kanye West and Kim Kardashian were able to afford private firefighters to basically protect their neighborhood
Wow.
and not others. This is absolutely an issue. It is also an issue up in Northern California, where you see where how some people are able to go to second houses. Some people are able to go to family, but there are a lot of people who are not protected or cared for, even by the formal shelter system. Their Red Cross has done a great job. They have a lot of good organized shelters, but they're just simply being overwhelmed. You also have undocumented people, right? So with the ICE raids and a lot of the sort of anti-immigrant policies going on, a lot of farm workers are not able to or unwilling to seek help. Understandably, because they could be sort of subject to other types of detainment or anti-immigration procedures. So, what we're seeing up in Chico, there is a massive spontaneous encampment that's gone up in the Walmart parking lot. The last time I was there, I saw hundreds, maybe up to 1,000 people camped out in the Walmart parking lot. You're also seeing now a new encampment has grown up around the parking lot of the Toys R Us, which has gone out of business. That's a vacant building, and people are basically camped out outside the vacant building, that and are outside in the smoke and just trying to do the best that they can. Driving around the city of Chico, you see all kinds of like parking lots, vacant lots with tents in them because people just either for whatever reason are unable or unwilling to participate or get help from the official shelter system. So there's a lot of people falling through the cracks, especially up in Northern California, where people are low income. They are renters. They don't have family. Many of them have gone up there because there's nowhere else to go. And so in addition to the population of already unhoused people, some of whom have been running from fires for at least a year or two. So, it's a huge problem, and it's absolutely an inequality problem because some of the things that we kind of just assume are there for us, the services, the insurance, the federal assistance that we assume are available to us after a major disaster are not always available to people who, for one reason or another, cannot participate in these systems.
Well, finally, Melissa, where can or what can ordinary people do? What can those of us who are sort of watching helplessly, watching this horror play out, that our friends and neighbors and fellow Californians are struggling through, what do you suggest they can do right now? Usually in disasters like this, you get the big organizations being flooded by donations that may or may not always be the most effective thing to do. What do you suggest? And tell us about the aid efforts you're involved in.
Right now, the material donations are actually being turned away by the shelters at this moment. Please, no more clothes. This is not a time to clean out your closet and just give your old stuff to people. There's a lot of need right now, as people are kind of starting to, think past the trauma a little bit and think about, where they can go and how to sort of start rebuilding their lives. People are asking a lot for gift cards from like Target, Walmart, and especially gas stations, as people are need to drive to family or just need to get out of there. We're needing like things like duffel bags and luggage to pack up. Again, a lot of people are giving donations, but remember that a lot of these people don't have any space to put anything other than like a bed and a shelter. And so eventually, as people start transitioning, they're going to need places to put stuff. Things like new clothing items are being accepted, things like winter socks, especially for elderly people, and new women's underwear is needed. But other than that, if you are able to come up to or go down, whatever, from wherever you're at, to basically sit with evacuees and people who have lost their homes. There's a lot of, the mental health infrastructure in this whole country and in the state has been woefully inadequate. And when we have a mass traumatic event like this, sometimes it's just enough to be able to sit with somebody and listen to their feelings, listen to them process and be a witness to their trauma. So there's, if people want to kind of volunteer, there are places to volunteer. The Hope Center in Oroville especially needs a lot of volunteers. There is also this the problem of, again, of the medium to long term in terms of how to get housing for the thousands and thousands of people who are displaced. It may be months before people are able to start rebuilding their homes. And once the shelters close, once the aid agencies, leave and people have forgotten already about this tragedy, we're going to have a lot of people that are going to need transitional housing. There are folks who have been, we've been thinking a long time about, transitional housing as a kind of permanent way of being able to receive people who need housing. People have been talking about tiny house villages, although that is, of course, a political fight because a lot of building codes and ordinances do not allow for this type of, co-housing or transitional living situations. I think it's time for us to have a conversation as a state about how our housing stock and our housing needs and social organization have to change in order to basically deal with the fact that we're going to have yearly tragedies. We're going to have more and more displaced people. We're going to have more and more people who, when they've lost everything, are not going to have the means to pick back up and get back to their lives right away. And so, I don't know the answer to these things. I've been thinking about them very intensely, especially living up in Butte County. I think it is time for us to have a conversation about how we deal with a population that's going to be on the move, every year having mass migration events, and how to deal with that and to give these people dignity and, to give all people who are unhoused dignity. Again, this is a climate and an economic refugee situation. Mm-hmm. These things, these fights are more and more bound up with each other. And it's time we had a conversation about that.
Melissa, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Stay safe out there. And thanks for all the work that you do. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. And stay safe yourself, Sonali.
Melissa Figueroa is a PhD candidate in geography at UC Berkeley. She was a press director for the Stein-Baraka 2016 presidential campaign and executive producer of the Green News Network. She's been a longtime political educator and organizer involved in a wide range of movements for social and environmental justice in California. She's also one of our news correspondents. We've been discussing the California wildfires. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.